The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and also probably from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. And I'm going to start with the Harvard Heart Letter. This is the February 2023 issue. And the first article is entitled, Revitalize Your Walking Routine. Need some motivation to maintain your commitment to this health-friendly exercise? Try these suggestions. Taking a daily walk is a great way to keep your heart and blood vessels healthy. This simple do-anywhere exercise can lower cholesterol, reduce blood pressure, and control blood sugar. Walking for 20 to 30 minutes a day can cut your risk of heart disease by about 30%, says Dr. Lauren Elson, a physiatrist at Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Network. But if your regular neighborhood jaunt starts feeling a little humdrum, you might need some extra inspiration to keep lacing up your walking shoes. If you're interested in further enhancing your cardiovascular health, add some short bursts of fast walking to your workout, says Dr. Elson, who is medical editor of the Harvard Special Health Report, Walking for Health. If you always walk at the same pace, your body adapts to that activity level, and the heart-related benefits start to plateau. Alternating short periods of fast walking with equal or longer periods of slower walking, a practice known as interval training, can ramp up your cardiac fitness in a shorter amount of time. Other strategies you can try, alone or in combination with interval training, include distractions or goals along the journey or at the destination. For doing intervals, a watch with a second hand works, but a timer makes things easier. Look for one that lets you preset both work and recovery times, and then alerts you when it's time to speed up or slow down. You can buy an individual timer like Gym Boss, G-Y-M-B-O-S-S, use a sports watch or smartwatch with an interval function, or download an interval timer app to your smartphone. A pair of earbuds also comes in handy, but it's safer to use just one earbud while you're walking, which keeps your other ear free for sounds in your environment that can alert you to hazards, like approaching cars. Most interval routines are based on time. Pick up your pace for 30 to 60 seconds, then slow back down to your normal stride for 1 to 2 minutes. The quick bursts can last for as little as 8 seconds or up to 4 minutes, followed by an equal or longer length of time for recovery. One variant of interval training, known as Tabata flips, T-A-B-A-T-A, the recovery periods are shorter than the high-intensity periods. The classic version alternates between 20 seconds at high intensity and 10-second recovery bouts. Don't want to use a timer? Use landmarks to mark your intervals. For example, walk fast for 1 block, then slow down for 2 blocks, or speed up between 2 telephone poles. Or a quarter of a lap around a local track. You could also count your steps, do 25 fast steps followed by 50 at a regular pace, or use music as a cue. Walk fast for 1 song, then ease up for 2 songs. Instead of music, you can listen to audiobooks or podcasts. All you need is a library card to borrow free audiobooks from your local library using the Libby app. www.overdrive.com/apps/Libby. That's L-I-B-B-Y. And overdrive is OVERDRIVE. To find podcasts of interest, do a quick Google search. Popular genres include comedy, news, society and culture, true crime, and sports. Currently, there are more than 2 million active podcasts worldwide. So keep perusing until you find one that grabs you. One idea is The Walk, which is at thewalkgame.com, a combination game and fitness tracker that features a spy story that only reveals itself as you rack up the required miles. If you prefer old-school printed books, seek out Little Free Libraries, which are free book exchange where anyone can take or leave books. Use the app, which is littlefreelibrary.org/app, to choose one or more as a walking destination in your neighborhood. Alternatively, try geocaching, a high-tech treasure hunt for hidden stashes of objects. See www.geocaching.com, GEOCACHING. You'll get a physical and mental workout as you navigate to the location and then search to find the geocache container. There's a small edit article here that's called Dress for Walking Success. Walking doesn't require any special attire, although good footwear is important, but some additional items may improve your walking experience. First is a hat with a brim. Wearing a brimmed hat can help you maintain good posture by keeping sun or rain out of your eyes. People tend to look down to shield their eyes. Even if you wear sunglasses, rays can sneak in over the top of the frames. Another is waterproof shoes. If you live in an area with a lot of rain, waterproof shoes may be worth the investments. Wet feet are more susceptible to blisters. Another is slim leg pants, leggings, or bike shorts. Wide leg pants or capris can flap as you walk, which can be annoying or may even slow you down. Lycra or spandex bike shorts can help prevent chafing by minimizing friction when your thighs rub together. Slip a pair of regular shorts or pants over the top if you don't want to wear skin-tight clothes in public. If you're out in the early morning or late evening, wear reflective gear from head to toe. The more your reflection resembles a human form, instead of just some random lines or a moving dot, the safer you'll be. To stash your phone, keys, and anything else, a waist pack is usually more comfortable than a backpack. Some have pouches that can hold water bottles, which come in handy during warm weather. Now we're going to turn to a short article in the Harvard Heart Letter of February 2023 called Ask the Doctor by Dr. Deepak L. Bhatt, who is the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. And the question is, what is vasculitis? After undergoing a battery of different tests, my father has been diagnosed with what his doctor described as a rare form of vasculitis. What can you tell me about this disease? Vasculitis is an umbrella term for a group of nearly 20 rare conditions characterized by inflammation of the blood vessels, including the arteries, veins, and capillaries. The inflammation can cause damage that narrows, weakens, or scars large or small vessels that supply just one body part, like the head, or many different organs. The different types of vasculitis are classified by the size and location of the affected vessels. Symptoms can vary widely from person to person, which is one reason vasculitis can be difficult to diagnose. In fact, one recent study found that nearly three-quarters of people with vasculitis were initially misdiagnosed, most often with an infection or allergies. Experts don't fully understand the cause of vasculitis, although many consider it an autoimmune disease, which happens when the immune system mistakenly attacks healthy tissue. Triggers for vasculitis include infections, allergies, or another autoimmune condition like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, or scleroderma. Although vasculitis can occur at any age, some forms are more common after middle age. In people aged 50 and older, the most common is giant cell arteritis, also called temporal arteritis, T-E-M-P-O-R-A-L, which usually affects arteries in the neck and scalp, especially those just above the ears at the temples. Common symptoms include persistent throbbing headaches and tenderness of the temples and scalp. Another type is polyarteritis nodosa, which occurs more in men than in women. It affects vessels in the skin, muscles, heart, kidneys, and intestines, causing symptoms like purplish-blue blotches or ulcers on the skin and pain in the muscles, joints, and abdomen. Tests to diagnose vasculitis may involve blood and urine tests, x-rays, or other imaging tests, and in some cases a small tissue sample taken from the affected organ. Milder forms of vasculitis, like those that affect just the skin, may resolve without treatment, but more serious cases require lifelong therapy, which starts by controlling inflammation, typically with steroids, to put the condition in remission. After that, immune-suppressing drugs can help prevent relapses. I always urge people diagnosed with vasculitis to seek care at medical centers with expertise in these unusual conditions. Most often, rheumatologists are the primary specialists who treat vasculitis, but other specialists may also be involved. Now, another article in the Harvard Heart Letter of February 2023 is entitled "Choosing Heart-Healthy Oils for Home Cooking." Including more plant-based foods in your diet makes sense for a lot of reasons, including the fact that the fats found in plants, like nuts, seeds, and olives, are mostly unsaturated. Decades of research demonstrates that consuming unsaturated fat in place of saturated fat, found mainly in animal-based foods like butter, cheese, and meat, is linked to a lower risk of heart attack and death from heart disease. Olive oil, a key component of the heart-friendly Mediterranean diet, has long been touted as one of the healthiest fats to use for cooking. But it's just one of many plant-based oils that are rich in unsaturated fatty acids, which are liquid at room temperature. If you read social media, you may have run across posts and memes claiming that seed oils like canola, safflower, and sunflower oils are responsible for a host of health problems like obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. But there is scant scientific evidence to support these claims, says Dr. Guy Crosby, an adjunct associate professor of nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Back in 2015, he wrote an article for Harvard's Nutrition Source addressing the misconceptions about the safety of canola oil, the second most commonly consumed oil in the United States after soybean oil. Even to this day, I get scathing emails from random people telling me how terrible canola oil is. It's true that seed oils count as processed foods, since manufacturing them involves crushing the seeds and then extracting the oil with hexane, a solvent. But for the average person, any residual traces of this chemical in oils and other foods are dwarfed by exposures from other sources, like gasoline fumes. Another concern involves trans fatty acids, which are linked to a heightened risk of heart disease. Canola oil, along with all other liquid oils sold in supermarkets, does contain small amounts of trans fat. These forms during the deodorizing process that gives oils a bland, neutral flavor. However, the amount of trans fats per one tablespoon serving is so low, the FDA allows these oils to include a contains zero trans fats claim on their labels. In terms of heart health, canola oil has several favorable attributes, says Dr. Crosby. It's a decent source of alpha-linolenic acid, ALA, the main vegetarian source of essential omega-3 fatty acids. Like EPA and DHA, the omega-3 fats found in fatty fish, ALA has anti-inflammatory and other effects thought to benefit cardiovascular health. Canola oil also contains phytosterols, which are compounds that occur naturally in plants that may help to lower cholesterol. For these reasons, people should consider canola oil safe and healthy for sautéing, stir-frying, roasting, and baking. It's also less expensive than olive oil, although cost isn't the only consideration. Some people avoid olive oil because of its reputation for having a grassy, fruity, or peppery flavor that doesn't necessarily want in certain dishes. However, most supermarket olive oil has a fairly mild flavor, and once you heat it up, all the volatile flavor compounds disappear in about 10 minutes. Dr. Crosby suggests keeping several different oils in your cupboard for varied uses. For example, you might want extra virgin olive oil to use in salad dressings and for dipping bread, and toasted seed or nut oils for drizzling on vegetables or other dishes. These would include sesame oil or walnut oil. For cooking, soybean is a fine alternative to canola oil, as is what's labeled as vegetable oil, which typically contains soybean oil, but may contain a blend of different oils. Some people get a lot of their calories from processed or restaurant-prepared foods, including deep-fried foods, and that's where the real risk lies. Repeatedly heating unsaturated oils up to high temperatures creates trans fats and other harmful substances, Dr. Crosby explains. Factories and restaurants don't change their oil often enough to get rid of those compounds, which likely contribute to the strong link between frequent fried food consumption and heart disease. Now here's another interesting article from the Harvard Heart Letter of February 2023, and it's entitled, The Latest on Lipoprotein A, that's L-I-P-O-P-R-O-T-E-I-N, an inherited cause of early heart disease. With promising new therapies on the horizon, cardiologists are testing more people for this biomarker known as LPA. About 1 in 5 people has high blood levels of fatty particles called lipoprotein A, which doctors refer to as LP little a or LP with the A in parentheses. Think of it as the evil twin of the familiar low-density lipoprotein cholesterol or LDL cholesterol, which is often called bad cholesterol. LPA particles are similar to LDL particles, but with an apolipoprotein A molecule wrapped around each one, says cardiologist Dr. Christopher Cannon, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. LPA accelerates the buildup of fatty plaque inside arteries and inflammation even more than LDL does. A high LPA level may double or even triple a person's risk of a heart attack. It also raises the risk of stroke and is linked to a narrowing of the aortic valve or aortic stenosis. So why have most people never even heard of LPA? For starters, LPA isn't picked up by a standard cholesterol test. You can get a separate LPA blood test, but doctors haven't routinely recommended it because currently there aren't any FDA-approved drugs to lower elevated LPA. And because LPA levels are largely genetically determined, eating and exercise habits are believed to have virtually no effect on the level of LPA in your bloodstream. But recent clinical trials of several investigational drugs have shown promising results, which have raised awareness of LPA. In Europe and Canada, guidelines already recommend that everyone get tested for LPA at least once in their life. In the United States, the recommendations are more conservative, with testing suggested for several groups. And the groups that are supposed to be tested include people with premature cardiovascular disease. In other words, people who have had a heart attack, a stroke, peripheral artery disease, or aortic stenosis before age 55 for men, or age 65 for women. People who have a father, mother, sister, or brother with premature cardiovascular disease should also be tested for LPA, and so should people with very high LDL cholesterol, 190 or higher. Close relatives, including siblings, children, and parents, of anyone with an elevated LPA level should also be tested. Growing numbers of cardiologists support more widespread LPA testing. I'm now measuring it in most of my patients who have or are at risk for cardiovascular disease, says Dr. Cannon. People with high LPA levels often have close family members who suffered a heart attack or a stroke in their 50s or even earlier. Some of these people appear to be unlikely candidates for developing heart disease because they don't have any traditional risk factors like high LDL cholesterol, diabetes, or high blood pressure. But many others have one or more of these risk factors, and the high LPA adds to their overall vulnerability to heart problems, says Dr. Cannon. We think of high LPA as a risk-enhancing factor that may warrant more intensive LDL lowering, in addition to paying close attention to a healthy lifestyle, he says. That means eating a mostly plant-based diet, getting regular exercise and sufficient sleep, and managing stress. Some people might benefit from aspirin and LDL-reducing drugs to lower their risk. People with high LPA should consult a cardiologist for specific advice, says Dr. Cannon. They should also suggest LPA testing for their close family members. I have patients who are in their 30s and 40s who find out they have high LPA and are worried, says Dr. Cannon. He reassures them that he's optimistic there will be an effective therapy soon. Now, once again in the Harvard Heart Letter for February 2023, we're going to turn to some shorter articles called Research We're Watching. And the first is, sugary drinks may raise levels of unhealthy blood fats. A new study links sugary drinks, the biggest source of added sugar in the American diet, to high levels of LDL cholesterol and other unhealthy fats in the bloodstream. Published in the November 2022 issue of the Journal of Nutrition, the study relied on nutrition and health data from more than 29,000 people involved in two long-running studies. Researchers focused on the participants' intake of sodas, lemonade, fruit drinks, and other sugar-sweetened beverage. Higher intakes, more than one 12-ounce serving per day, were linked to increased level of unhealthy blood fats, including LDL cholesterol, triglycerides, and other lipids associated with a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. These results don't prove that sugary drinks cause blood lipids to rise. They are consistent with earlier research on this topic, however. Here's another short article. To lower heart risk, pump up your exercise efforts. To improve heart health, increase the volume or intensity of your exercise. And boosting both is even better, new research suggested. The study, published December 2022 in the European Heart Journal, included more than 88,000 adults aged 40 to 69 who were free of heart disease. For a week, the participants wore wrist activity trackers, which are particularly good for capturing sporadic bouts of differing intensity during the day. After a median follow-up of 6.8 years, the researchers found that the higher amounts of physical activity were associated with a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. But including more moderate intensity activity in your daily routine may lower risk even more, say the authors. As an example, they suggest converting a 14-minute stroll into a 7-minute brisk walk, or doing your regular household chores at a faster pace. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.